It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. And boy, do we have a great episode for you. Mary Jo welcomes our teen AI overlords. Paul Thurrott has a lot of phones and Intel goes tick, tock, boom. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 458, recorded March 23rd, 2016. It's not terrible. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet that you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/windows and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/windows. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it for free at freshbooks.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. It's the show that we force into your brain like a Get Windows 10 nag screen. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the digital Jesuit, in for Leo Laporte. And of course, as always, I'm joined by the magnificent Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Paul Thurrott, the guru behind Thurrott.com, purveyor of news, reviews, and analysis for every tech enthusiast. And Mary Jo Foley from All About Microsoft, which at some point in this broadcast, I will call All About Android just because Jason Howell's voice is too silky smooth.
It's happened. It has happened.
It has happened. Paul, Mary Jo, well, we haven't done this for almost a year. It's been a long time.
Too long, I can't believe Padre.
It's too long.
Time flies when you're playing COD.
Yes, it does.
Well, I'm going to have to lean on the two of you because it has been a really long time. I don't even remember how the show goes.
Usually it's kind of a downward spiral.
Pretty much. So we get to beer and then it goes back up.
Well, the good news is actually this week we really don't have anything crazy negative. You know, there's been some bad stuff happening lately. Been a couple of shows this year where, you know, you have to kind of step back from the cliff a little bit. It's not that bad today.
Bad news after bad news. So today is there's some good news mixed into the stock. I see a few glimmers of light.
Yep. Well, actually, we should also point up front, if it's possible, we should try to do some Q&A with the audience today.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if people have questions they want to ask, it can be about whatever we're talking about today or not.
So if you are in the chat room, folks, you can go to irc.twit.tv if you're not in the chat room. Go ahead and send me questions. I will start collecting them for Mary Jo and for Paul. Or you could hit me up on Twitter or hit Paul or Mary Jo on Twitter. And if you get us during the episode, who knows, your question may end up on
Please do not hit me on Twitter. I get beaten up enough.
Hit me. Padre
You can hit me on Twitter. There you go. I'm always multitasking.
All right. What's first, Paul?
Well, I thought next week, Mary Jo and I and many other people who do what we do are heading to San Francisco for the Build Conference, which is Microsoft's big developer show. One thing I'm going to be doing between now and the day of the show is going back and watching the keynote from last year to kind of rehash what they did last year and kind of rate them on how things have gone over the year that's occurred since. But maybe this time, or for now, what we could do is look forward to, you know, what we expect from the show, what we know is going to happen. I mean, Microsoft's actually made a couple of announcements before the show that one might think they would have made at the show. They purchased Xamarin, for example. They announced that the Android Bridge was canceled. They've talked a little bit about Windows apps on Xbox One and when we can expect that. But, I mean, is there anything else we haven't? Mary Jo, do you have any predictions or ideas for the show?
I think we should definitely start by talking about Build for sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny because you said you're going to go back and watch the keynotes. I'm thinking, remember day one keynote? It was like the first hour was about Azure and a lot about data lakes and SQL Server. And
yeah, so let me amend what I just said. I'm actually not going to watch that.
Except, you know what? I think this year I will be surprised if we don't see something very similar because, you know, when Build started out, it was very much a Windows show. It was all like Windows development, but now it's very much about cloud development, right?
Right, in keeping with their change of focus, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I think we're going to see something kind of similar this year. That's my biggest prediction about Build is it's not going to be so much about Windows first. It's cloud first.
And that's how it should be, right? I mean, that's the new strategy. Cloud first, cloud all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, Microsoft kind of provided a hint of this when they announced they weren't going to have any hardware giveaways. You know, in the past, the idea was always that we need to seed developers with these new types of hardware because that's the only way they can take advantage of new features that they might write for in their own applications. This time, the capabilities are all up in the cloud, and we have our kind of guesses that maybe they'll give developers who show up at Build some, you know, Azure credits or whatever. I don't know if you can get like an Azure gift card when you go to CVS, you know, next to the iTunes gift card or whatever. you know, something along those lines, yeah.
Hadoop gift cards at CVS. Yeah,
it's like iTunes, Hadoop.
Actually, I want to ask the two of you about that because that is a trend in some of the more popular developer conferences. Of course, Google I.O., there's Microsoft Build, where they're scaling back the freebies. And right. There's a couple of reasons for that. One, as you mentioned, you really should be in the cloud now. So there's not a whole lot of hardware I have to give you for you to be able to develop the software and the tools that we're talking about at the conference. But also, they're realizing a lot of these events have just become a place for people to get cheap hardware.
It's the looky-loo factor.
Right.
You know, in other words, you're getting people who convince their workplace to send them there at whatever cost, and then they come home with a $3,000 laptop or whatever it is, and mission accomplished.
Does that work? I mean, I know Google I.O. didn't completely eliminate, but they really scaled back the freebies that
remember, one year the freebie was the Google Cardboard.
Right, exactly.
I thought that was really funny because, you know, the year before they'd given away all these devices, I think. And, you know, Cardboard is this $29, you know, collection of cardboard, essentially, and lenses. But I think it's the right way to go. Dating back to PDC, same thing. You know, PDC, there was always like kind of the laptop of the year that you would get at PDC before there was a Build, I think. Or maybe I'm commingling Build and PDC in my head, but I know this goes back years and years. And there is a kind of a strange element to that where you kind of do feel like some of those people aren't necessarily serious about developing for Windows in this case or whatever. They're scamming the system. So I think it's the right decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're also in this period at Microsoft right now where we think they're not going to have a really big new hardware launch till 2017. So we're kind of in this period like what would you give people if you did give them something?
HoloLens.
I mean, no, you're not going to give them HoloLens. They're charging $3,000 for that.
Yeah,
right?
Probably not.
Yeah. You know, I you could make arguments for things like a wireless display adapter, which lets you use Continuum Lumias, which aren't exactly blown out the door anyway. You know, maybe if there was a new Surface 4, that could be something. But I think none of that really matters because Microsoft, if anything, over the last year has proven that when it comes to the client side, all clients are equal in their eyes, and that really everything is about the cloud, which is basically the premise of that article you wrote that just disappeared from OneNote. happened.
It's there, isn't it?
Now, interesting. We've got Jimmy Fowle in the chat room, and he's saying instead of giving away hardware, they should make attendees say what app they've created for Windows.
Yeah.
And actually, that does happen. I mean, at GDC, at the Google booth, at Google I.O., even at CES, at some of the little developer events, they'll let you in the door, but they kind of know that you're not serious if you can't name one thing that you've developed. I mean, if you come to a developer conference and you don't even know what programming language you use, they put you at the kiddies table.
It's a little bit of French, a little bit of English.
Yeah.
Can I have my free hardware now, please?
This is the first time that I've received a media invite to Build.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Unfortunately, I had the dates wrong on my summer calendar, so I'm leaving for Hawaii over the weekend.
You'd rather go to Hawaii than go sit with a bunch of sweaty developers in a small hall?
I did actually consider. I was looking at the cost of flying back because I'm going with a companion. Oh, we're celebrating his doctorate. But I'm going with a companion, but I was like, what would it cost me to fly back for like 48 hours?
I bet it's big bucks.
It wasn't cost effective. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But you are looking forward to it. I mean, let's go back to the actual material that they'll be covering at the conference. There's going to be a lot of cloud. In fact, we had a demonstration on This Week in Enterprise Tech, a pre-recording we did on Monday, from Argyle Data here in the Bay Area. And they were using data lakes to show and predict phone attacks, fraudulent phone attacks. And it was amazing when you do Hadoop right, the kind of visualization that you get. I would love to see more of that at Build.
You've just said a lot of nonsense words to me. I have no idea what you're saying.
And I bet you're going to see what you want to see, Padre, because, I think I'm kind of guessing they might talk a lot about SQL Server on day one, because they also did just announce SQL Server on Linux, and they're at release candidate one stage of SQL Server 2016 for Windows right now. So I think we're going to hear and see a lot more about what you can do with like Power BI and data analysis and databases as part of the big reveal at Build.
Right, right. Paul.
Yes, sir.
I was at Enterprise Connect 2 weeks ago, and I was interviewing some of the Cisco execs. I had a reaction when I asked about the hybridization of services. Idea that if you're a company today, you need to offer your service as cloud, as on-premise, or some hybrid between the two.
Okay.
And they got violent about that. And they said, no, that's the wrong way to think about it. I think the future is not just cloud first, but cloud way first. In other words, that the desktop client, the on-premise client, is so far down the line that we don't even put development time into it. It's an afterthought.
That's a very forward-leaning way to look at the world. I mean, that's an almost Google way to look at the world. I don't think that's realistic for corporations, to be honest. I mean, and I think that's why Microsoft's hybrid approach to everything is such a strength and a unique strength, because they have a leg in the on-prem world and were the trusted provider for enterprise services when on-prem was everything.
Right.
And so as people move to public and private clouds and increasingly to hybrid deployments as well. I mean, I think the fallacy behind hybrid is that people thought it was a step, whereas I think it's actually the destination. It's just a question of how much is on-prem and how much isn't. And it's going to vary from company to company, but I don't think hybrid ever really goes away.
That was my take. I mean, I understand why they're saying that. I mean, that's what Cisco does, and their new tools, they've actually set aside, a couple million dollars to help developers develop tools for cloud-only applications. But to me, I think they're conflating mobile first with cloud first. Yeah. And mobile first doesn't necessarily mean cloud first. It just means we're recognizing a lot of our workforce is not going to be in the office anymore. Mary Jo, are you hearing that, whispers of the mobile first strategy from Build?
Yeah, you know, I think the interesting thing to watch for, and this brings in Xamarin, right? They just bought Xamarin, which allows C# and F# developers to write for other mobile platforms like iOS and Android and the Mac. So I think even that part of what we hear from Microsoft at Build is going to be very much about the cloud too. Like, if you think about it, how do you bring Xamarin in when you've been talking up this whole universal Windows platform? The way you bring them in is you say, you know what? Now we can develop apps everywhere, including mobile first. And the thing that brings it all back to us is how you connect to the cloud as a developer and a customer. So I think we will hear mobile, but with the cloud kind of as the first point of emphasis.
By the way, I also think that with Xamarin, it's not an answer to the same question. It's the opposite direction. You know, a lot of the bridge technologies were about bringing in developers from other platforms to universal Windows. The point of Xamarin is not to do that. It's really in the opposite direction, is to open up the world of other mobile device platforms to people who are C# Windows developers today. And so these things are complementary, and they're literally moving in the opposite directions. And so I think with Xamarin, they have a much more complete set of solutions than I did before.
One of the things they did at last Build was, before Build last year, they were calling their development platform Universal Apps, right? And then last year at Build, they rechristened it Universal Windows Platform Apps. So now you wonder at this Build, are they going to go back to Universal Apps? or something like that, you know?
Yes, exactly. And when you say that, do you mean in the sense that maybe they are going to be apps that run on non-Windows platforms?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it'll go that far because we've talked about that before, right? Like, do you somehow enable universal apps to run on Android?
I think that has to be the ultimate goal. You know, whether it happens this year or not. I mean, I think that's the eye to the future that they've always had. And maybe Android, not so specifically, although I think Android happens. But this notion that if you can empower developers to write a single solution, I just invented Java again, actually, as I say this, you know, that, that runs on multiple platforms. That's a powerful thing. And, you know, Java was a powerful vision back in 1995-ish, whenever they came up with it, late 90s. But I don't think that the platforms that Java ran on were ready, frankly, for this kind of thing. And I think there's an opportunity today for that to work.
Paul.
Can I throw in one more
point
there before I forget it? you know what I think is going to be the thing that Microsoft talks up a lot as being their cross-platform thing is VS Code, right? Which is the lightweight Visual Studio editor that they introduced. I think that also was last year at Build. I think you're going to hear more and more about how that also is tied to the cloud, and that kind of becomes their way of talking about Visual Studio itself as being a cross-platform thing.
I always thought the future of Visual Studio was cloud-based anyway, that you would essentially cloud, you know, target platforms, that kind of thing, do testing on different platforms and cloud-hosted VMs and so forth. It just seems like that's the natural end game there.
Paul, I was just thinking, you know, with Xamarin, with this whole idea of cross-platform development, it's absolutely important that the primary Microsoft products make that jump. I mean, and we're already seeing that with Office 365. They will run on pretty much everything, but that is a cloud-first platform.
Yep.
But is there really enough of a critical mass of developers who are making Windows apps that need to end up on Android? Because I would think it would be the other way around. You want to entice Android developers to say, well, as long as you're developing, why not also drop it onto the Windows platform, Windows Phone platform?
So, you know, when you say developers, I think people, you know, developers today, I think a lot of people look at mobile devices and think developers, you know. But the audience Microsoft is really speaking to is corporations. And they really do need to bring really old legacy solutions, whatever they might be, line of business apps, web apps, whatever, forward technologically, hopefully to Windows, you know, universal Windows platform apps, you know, from Microsoft's perspective. But they too are eyeing the mobile world, you know, and I think Microsoft, again, being that trusted supplier of enterprise services for the past 25 years or whatever, 20 years, is the appropriate company to help them make that transition in this way as well, you know. And so, again, the developer stuff, it goes in both directions. We're trying to attract, we are meaning Microsoft, not me, but, you know, Microsoft, that's our community is trying to, you know, attract developers from other platforms to Windows. But we also need to drive Windows developers forward as well. And I think that's part of it. And that's why I talk, you know, Xamarin is important, but I also think about universal apps on Android as being important. I mean, it's not a given that it's going to happen, but it's something, you know, that we kind of think about.
Yeah, that works for me. What about Internet of Things? Internet of Things is going to be a big part of Build. Of course, Azure, they've been making a big push to connect the Internet of Things to Azure because Azure can do some fantastic big data analytics. But there is a very unique perspective here, and that is from the perspective of speech. We're seeing more and more devices that are connected to big data analytic engines that have natural speech recognition. And that opens up an entirely new market of the kind of analytics that you can do. Actually, it's kind of scary if you look at some of the privacy concerns. But there's a lot of buzz around building Internet of Things devices. But really, we all have Internet of Things devices. We're carrying them. They're our phones. And there are hundreds and hundreds of millions of them in the United States alone. And they are all connected back to either a Google or a Microsoft big data engine.
They'd be useless without it.
Right.
You know, frankly.
People talk about, we had kind of an outcry when we were covering the new devices coming out from Amazon, the Dot and whatever the other one is called, because they're like, Amazon will be pushing out their always listening device even further into the edge. And I'm thinking, well, you're already carrying one.
This was the Kinect argument, you know, that this thing is a camera that's in your living room and it's watching you as you watch TV. That kind of Big Brother scenario. By the way, if you think it's funny when you make typos on an iPhone or whatever, when you're sending a text message, wait until you make voice typos with your voice recognition Alexa system or Cortana, or whatever it may be that you're using. I mean, Apple announced something where they can use voice control. I think they said to enter usernames and passwords on Apple TV. My password is a complex series of characters. I can't even imagine being able to enter that with my voice accurately. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to overcome, but I think that in the same way that phones are a convenience, a lot of us can't live without once we experience it. The ability to just say something and make it happen is going to be hard to avoid. You know, it's going to be hard not to have it once you have it.
Right. And we think often like Cortana is kind of the be all end all here, but it's totally not the only thing that Microsoft's doing. Like they've got a lot of built-in speech APIs inside of Windows 10 that developers already can build with. And then they also have this thing that's called Project Oxford, which is a set of like natural language and facial analytics services that are in Microsoft Research right now, but I bet are very close to becoming Azure services too. So I actually found this presentation that Microsoft did in China recently. I didn't know they did another WinHack, but I guess they had a three-day WinHack in February this year in China. And they were talking to developers there about what if you could add speech to some IoT devices like robots or even like a camera inside your garage. So if you're driving away and you're like, wow, did I just shut the garage door? You can look and see and actually say, shut the door. Those kind of things. So they're already thinking ahead about, you know, how do you add voice, not just with Cortana, but these other methods to make your IoT devices feel even more like their natural user kind of experiences, not just like robots kind of off in their own world.
And actually, Google may have a step up on that because they're doing that sort of natural contextual speech in their new payment service that they're starting to roll out over in Oakland, over in the East Bay of the Bay Area. The payment system is always listening, but it understands it doesn't go into pay mode until you come close enough to a register to actually activate that. And then it combines with a camera and voice recognition and its own natural speech to text feature in order to figure out what you want it to do. And in this case, I want to pay with Google Wallet. Microsoft, I got to think Microsoft's doing a parallel line of research on that because
we hope.
Right?
We're laughing because what are they even doing in payments?
Microsoft and
exactly payments. I know. Like, we don't know what they're doing in payments. We haven't heard anything about that in a year.
But I mean, it's not just the payments. This idea of, I think we're getting to the point where, as Paul said, we all know that we have a phone. We're getting to the point where, well, we all know that there's always a microphone on. And the first vendor that comes to market with a natural speech to text to feature device or software is going to make people realize I'm willing to give up my paranoia about always being listened to. If suddenly all my devices, my car, my house, my garage door, as Mary Jo Foley was saying, are all tuned to what I want. And maybe it's not going to be entering passwords because, Paul, as you mentioned, that's going to be an absolute pain. But
well, maybe not. I mean, but I it's interesting that they're going down that path, right? In other words, in fact, well, not to get too Apple specific here. I mean, I think one of the issues there is the new Apple TV remote is so terrible because you have to swipe around on the top thing to enter letters and numbers. It's really kind of hard to use. And so you have a sort of a self-inflicted problem. Let's solve it with voice. You know, I mean, it's the other thing this remote does. I mean, it's the hammer nail thing. I mean, I think we all, or I should say all these platform makers kind of suffer from this. You know, Google approaches the world from a cloud perspective. Microsoft approaches it from a hybrid perspective. We all have our own, you know, kind of skill set. So I just think that this stuff is going to become so useful and so immediately obviously good that there's no stopping it. That's all.
But will it, Paul? I mean, how many times have you had to repeat yourself to your phone and then you end up yelling at your phone?
Yeah, yeah, yep. Oh, no, I yell at computers and phones and my neighbors and people I don't know in the street. I'm on Twitter. I'm kind of a disaster.
Java users.
Yep. Oracle customers, all kinds of things.
I yell at everything that doesn't understand me. So, I mean, why should this be any different?
No, but you know, I my mother is in her 70s. She's practically blind. She has a computer with a really big screen. She can't see it. The ability to speak to this thing would be transformational for her. You know, I think you just have to put yourself in, you know, all you have to do is use these things. And when they do work, it's wonderful. I mean, there's the stupid stuff that has to happen first, you know, that cloying TV actress asking Siri if it's raining outside when she's standing in front of a window and can see the rain, you know, that kind of goofiness. But these things are, you know, when they are useful, they take off. And I think voice control is just, it's natural by nature. And, so to speak, and it's inevitable. I mean, I say it that with a sense of dread.
Right? Yeah. It's also built into HoloLens, too. So that also shows you kind of where they're thinking and where they're going, I think.
Look, I mean, back before we had smartphones, I don't remember the exact name of these things, but, you know, there were the kinds of cell phones that were like walkie-talkies where you had these conversations out loud. And so you could be on a train or a bus or something or out in the world and someone's having like what is essentially like a World War II field phone conversation with somebody else. And not only do you get to hear them having the conversation, but you get to hear the other side of it with like this annoying crackle of electricity between each part of the conversation. Pre-smartphone, that kind of thing was actually very popular for some reason. You know, people are going to talk to their devices. They're just going to talk. You know, it's like it will be the Bluetooth headset of the 2020s or whatever, however you want to say it. I mean, I just don't see how you can stop it.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was at a Microsoft party at GDC last week. And I got the geek table. I love the geek table. And one of the engineers was saying how it's wrong to call it speech recognition, even natural speech recognition. Yeah, he didn't that because he said there are a lot of vendors who are stuck on voice triggering, and we know how to do voice triggering, and voice triggering sometimes works and sometimes doesn't work. He said what he was most interested in and what he really wanted resources to be pulled into is not voice triggering, but conversational control. He wanted an operating system to be able to listen to you over time and just figure out what it is that you need, even if you don't ask for it. And that was an interesting paradigm shift. I get it. And so, yeah, most of the time when we think of voice control, it would be I call out whoever it is my digital assistant is, Siri or Alexa or Cortana, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then I ask a question that I know that it's been taught to listen to. He was saying, no, you should be able to go about your day. You're walking around your house and you're muttering under your breath because something's displeasing you. And suddenly your house says, I noticed that you're really angry. It sounds like you need this. Do you want me to order it for you?
Listen, okay. This technology would be dangerous in my household because that's all it would ever say. It's like, Paula, we notice you're angry all the time. And maybe you should just sit in a quiet room and listen to bird sounds.
Yeah, that's one step away from saying, I noticed you're really angry. I'm not going to let you drive. I'm disabling your car.
It's like, I noticed you're really angry. And then the guy just pulls out a gun and shoots whatever's speaking to him, like some little sensor on the wall or whatever.
Isn't that one of the Project Oxford services, though, that it recognizes by your facial expression if you're mad or kind of what emotion you're sensing at that point? Maybe that's how that starts.
Reverb Mike in the chat room is saying it's clippy for your home. Hey, I notice you're swearing a lot. Are you planning a crime?
Right. I notice every single time you watch the show House Hunters, you yell at the TV. Maybe you should watch something else.
This is no longer on your approved watching list.
Yep. We're not going to let you watch this. That will make me happy.
We welcomed our robotic overlords with voice recognition. All right. Let's move off of build because we do have some decent Windows stories, some actually fun Windows stories. Who's got this first one on Edge finally getting extensions and coming into the new age?
I can start it. Yep. So we thought this was about to happen. And right after Windows Weekly last week, Microsoft released a new build of Windows 10 for fast-ring insiders on mobile and PCs. And the PC version had for the first time, version of extensions built for Edge, the browser, the new browser. So there are three extensions that Microsoft built for people to start trying. One is the Microsoft Translator. One is a set of Reddit enhancements. And the other one is mouse gestures. So this is just the beginning. Like we know LastPass and AdBlocker are coming. But Microsoft had kind of been toying with the idea of, yeah, we're going to have extensions for Edge, and they hadn't really told people when. So a lot of people were starting to worry that they might not get it out this year, even, because we know that Redstone 1, which is the next big set of features for Windows 10, is coming around June, as far as we've heard. And so people were saying, wow, if they don't get this Edge extension preview out pretty soon, is it going to make it this year? So now it's out. The first pass of it is out. Microsoft, actually, right after Build ends the following Monday, they're going to have a conference all about Edge in San Francisco. So I'm sure they're going to talk to developers there more about building more Edge extensions. And it's worth pointing out that right now, the way you work with these is not the way that you ultimately are going to get them. They're saying once they're available to everyday users, extensions will be in the Windows Store. But right now, that's not how you get them. You have to download them separately, I believe. So it's a start. Finally, extensions are coming to Windows 10.
I don't remember if they actually said this, but I was under the impression, apparently misguided, that Chrome extensions would work on Edge, you know, that was part of the deal. That was kind of based on the Chrome extension model. And I think their documentation around this says basically that it's not that hard to port Chrome extensions to Edge, but it does require a bit of work. And so hopefully what will happen is that the people who make extensions will, you know, do that little bit of work and bring them to Edge. But, you know, it's kind of a slippery slope. But we know, you know, like you said, AdBlock's going to be there. Amazon LastPass, Evernote, and some other companies are all working on Edge extensions. But it'd be really neat if there was some streamlined way of just getting, you know, Chrome extensions in, because there's so many of those already.
Yeah. Didn't Brad Sams find somebody had tweeted, I forget who it was, somebody on the browser team said, yeah, we're building a porting tool.
Oh,
actually
okay.
Building a tool.
I don't actually interact with Brad online, Mary Jo, so I'm not
really sure. You kind of ignore him, but I watch his tweets sometimes. And
yeah, someone asked him.
I got to ask this, though. Last week, they finished up the Pwn to Own competition.
Yep.
And they found out that Edge was actually, they were able to run a few exploits, but it was actually way, way better than IE ever was. And I think it only lost out to Chrome, which still has some really good sandboxing technology built into it.
Right.
But allowing extensions, I know it's a different kind of extension approval process for Edge.
Yeah.
That's gonna make it more easy to penetrate, right? I mean, because extensions tend to be the weak link on a lot of these browsers.
Yeah, but this is the defining debate of our age, isn't it? You know, security versus functionality. I mean, in some ways, Microsoft is in a good place again for the same reason. Somehow I've been repeating this today, but they're Microsoft. These things will be controllable via group policy, and that businesses that want to prevent their users from using certain extensions or only allowing certain extensions will certainly be able to do so, because that's the way Microsoft does things. So I think they can't be competitive with a browser and not support extensions. Hopefully they do it in a way that's safe. And we'll see. But yeah, I think the extension model is going to impact the security of Edge in a negative way. I don't see how it couldn't.
Paul, do you use Edge?
No.
Mary Jo?
No, and I try. Oh. I mean, I've tried.
So wait, what is your browser?
Chrome.
I use Chrome on Windows 10.
Chrome.
Yeah. And by the way, but I will say this. I love the way that Edge renders the web. And I mean text and graphics. And Windows 10, you know, supports display scaling. So if you have a 4K display or high-res display, smaller screen, whatever it is, Windows 10 does a good job. But a lot of browsers don't. A lot of other applications don't. And Edge, by virtue of the fact, I guess it's part of Windows 10, for whatever reason, it just really does a great job of rendering things. I really like the way it makes things look.
Yeah.
I want to use it. But there's really basic things it doesn't do. And it's not just extensions. Extensions is always the one that people throw out. But you can't even do something like grab the web icon for the page you're on and drag it down to the desktop to make a shortcut. You can't do that. You know, Chrome has the ability to, in fact, it's a tip for later today, the ability to pin web apps to your taskbar or to your start menu and then run them alongside other apps as apps in app windows instead of in a browser window. You know, it's very powerful stuff. It's very useful stuff. It's stuff that I use every day, and Edge just doesn't do that stuff. And so as beautiful as it is, I just can't, you know, I mean, I try, but I just can't.
Yeah.
I think once it has extensions, I think I will use Edge, or at least I'll give it more of a try.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
I love the fact that Edge gets touchscreens in a way that Chrome doesn't. There's so many things about any touchscreen-enabled computer, be it a desktop or a laptop, that just clunks along with Chrome. It kind of works, but there are other times like the simple pinch doesn't work right, or it doesn't scroll the right screen properly.
Right. The scroll bar is 2 pixels wide for some reason in Chrome, and you can't hit it with your finger.
And Edge is so much better at that. And the other thing is, I've actually been using Edge not really as a browser, but as a unified communications tool, because it's really good at clipping things and highlighting things and sending things off into a UC meeting that you can't do on Chrome. Yep. But when it comes down to what do I go to as my default browser, it's still Chrome.
Yeah.
All right. What about the new build of Windows 10? I hear that that's going to be nuclear powered and will include all the features everyone has ever asked for.
Yep. Cures cancer. It's really great. Well, that's the one that includes the Edge extent, you know, Edge, the version of Edge that supports extensions. There's some other new Edge features actually in there as well. You can pin tabs up in the corner. This is a feature, I think, I want to say Firefox does this, where you have little mini tabs that just have the website icon on there, and they kind of always load every time you load the browser. It's sort of a half step toward the thing I was just talking about, where you know, have your favorite web apps or websites pinned as apps, but, you know, that's not for me really either. Updated Maps app, this is actually very timely. I ended up writing about this separately because last week one of the big news stories was that Here was abandoning Windows, leaving us with Windows Map, which uses Here technology in the back end, but has never been as good of an experience in usage for things like navigation and especially for public transportation. So there's actually a major update to Maps that sort of leads me to believe that Microsoft knew that Here was leaving. I mean, the timing is very interesting because it actually addresses some of the problems. And then some other updated things like the alarm and clock app was updated, et cetera. But I think the big thing here is that, I don't know if this is the first, I guess it's not really the first one this year, but it's one of the first builds we've gotten this year that actually has new features. And compared to the previous build, which I think was the other one, this one has a ton of new features. So there's actually some stuff in it. So if you're interested in testing new versions of Windows, you know, suddenly things are starting to move along a little more quickly as far as new features go.
I think the new feature that I absolutely need is I need Windows 10 to stop breaking my USB devices.
In what sense?
I can't use it for any of my podcast work because it breaks Adobe Premiere. Adobe Premiere Pro, because I'm still using 5 on my desktop, it just craps out in the middle of rendering sessions. It has broken 3 of my USB interfaces that I use to connect XLR mics to my computer. So I have no idea what that's about. They'll work for a while and then they desync and I have to do a hard reset. For some reason, it's also messed up my webcams. My 7-year-old webcams that have worked just fine on Windows 7, Windows 8, 8.1 don't work properly on 10. And I can't figure it out. I've tried it on 3 or 4 different desktops, 2 different laptops, and it's always the same thing. So there's something about Windows 10 driver support for some USB devices that just is not up to par.
I haven't had trouble with the Logitech webcams.
I haven't had any USB issues aside from one phone that I finally realized just is the phone. You know, like it was the computer you can't recognize this USB device, that kind of error that you get on USB. I tried it on a bunch of different computers, and then I finally realized, wait a minute, this is the phone. There's something wrong. Something wrong with the phone. It's not. I tried cables, and it's the phone. But anyway, I've not experienced that. Sorry.
You know what? It may actually just be me.
I was gonna say user error is the most likely.
ID10T, PEBCAC, all those things apply.
Yep.
Well, when we come back, we have some happy news for people who just are big fans of Microsoft Maps, because I know you've been a little gloomy. You've heard a little of gloom and doom coming your way. Not so much. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here to bring you some light. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank the first sponsor of Windows Weekly. And it starts with a question. Do you remember that feeling when you first used your corporate internet? Do you remember when it just looked right and had all the information that you needed, and it included things like links and email tabs and the things that you saw so wonderfully on the internet? well, that corporate internet probably doesn't look so good anymore. It's probably outdated. It probably doesn't have any of the features you need. And it probably doesn't use responsive design, which means you can't use it properly on the devices you carry today. That's why I'm so happy to have Igloo as a sponsor of Windows Weekly. Now, Igloo is an internet that you'll actually like. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog your updates, coordinate your calendars, and manage projects. It's built using responsive design, and that means that everything you do at your desktop, you can now use on your laptop, on your tablet, and on your mobile through any web browser. Now, anyone can add content based on their permissions with drag-and-drop widgets and with a WYSIWYG editor, and they offer a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only your authorized users have access, and even then, only to the areas that they're authorized to use, in private clouds, over SSL, and with 256-bit encryption. Unlike other solutions, you can customize your Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments. You don't have to junk everything in order to use Igloo. You could use it with Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, and coming soon, file sharing solutions from Box and Dropbox, all with your branding so it never feels as if your employees are jumping off the corporate intranet to use the tools that they already know how to use. It's used by government agencies and companies like Hulu, Inventive Health, American Family Insurance, and Ipswich. If they trust Igloo, don't you think you should too? Here's what we want you to do. We want you to try it for free today at igloosoftware.com/twit. That's igloosoftware.com/twit, or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And when you sign up through our link, you can get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. That's igloosoftware.com/twit, igloosoftware.com/twit. And we thank Igloo for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul, Mary Jo, lead us back into the light. Microsoft Maps is not dead. It's not as dead.
It's not terrible. It's just that, you know, the Here apps were so central to the whole Windows Phone experience. It was kind of a tough loss. But like I said, I mean, they updated the Windows Map app on both phone and on PCs. And there are a number of improvements. But the three that really stand out to me are improvements to the turn-by-turn navigation experience, which makes it work a little bit more like it did in Here Drive Plus. Also supports a landscape perspective, which, of course, is necessary in a car for many people. There's a multiple search feature, which allows you to view several searches on a single map at the same time. And so that's the type of thing where maybe you have hotels and restaurants together. You know, it's two separate searches appearing on the same map. That's kind of a cool feature. And the other one, which addresses that, you know, lack of Here transit in this case, ability is they've improved the public transit information in the app. And it's not, you know, it's not quite the same. Here Transit had this really cool UI, and I'm sure a few people in the United States are even familiar with it, but they basically offer a split view now with the map and then the kind of a linear transit map within Windows Maps. And so that's kind of cool. And I think a lot of these updates were done to minimize the impact of the Here apps disappearing on Windows. And honestly, this is, I mean, I do think they've known about this for some time, and I think that's how they were able to make it happen. But a lot of times when bad things happen with Microsoft, there's a lot of complaining, and then a lot of time goes by before we see anything substantive happen. And in this case, there was a lot of complaining, and then 2 days later, it was like, hey, look, this new app. You know, it's like, it was kind of a nice, you know, kind of a nice turnaround, frankly. So if mapping is important to you.
If mapping is important to you, actually, this is an issue. Do we need Microsoft to work on their maps?
We do if there's no viable third-party alternative, right? If Google Maps was available on Windows, I'd say, you know, whatever. And it, obviously, in that it's available on the web. But, I mean, if you have a Windows 10 mobile phone, for example, your choices for navigation in particular, but also just for finding local things. You know, we're going to San Francisco next week and we want to find a bar or restaurant or whatever. We don't really have a lot of high quality choices for that type of thing. And Microsoft, like Apple and Google, has stuff they built into the phone and it's pretty good. It's changed a little bit over the years. But it's a lot like the Mail and Calendar app or the Groove Music app in Windows 10. You kind of have to ship the basics in the OS these days. You have to provide your least sophisticated users with solutions to kind of everything that they might want to do. even though they might choose to go after a third-party solution when it does exist. I mean, you have to kind of have that. So I think it's important that they keep they have a mapping and location app, and, you know, keep it up to date and try to keep it as close as possible to what Apple and Google are doing with their Maps apps.
But is there something that Microsoft Maps, you think, does better than the other?
No.
Okay, that was easy. All right.
I do not.
You didn't even have to have a discussion on that one.
No, there's probably nothing, honestly, that they do better. But
so really, the only thing it has is that Google Maps isn't available.
That's a terrible way to put it, but no, it's not. By the way, it's not that it's terrible. I mean, it doesn't have to beat Google Maps point by point. I mean, that's not really the gist of this. I mean, it's been okay. You know, I would say in the Windows 10 generation, it's not bad. You know, with this update, it got a lot better, and that's important because we just got sucker punched with the hair stuff, and this kind of it doesn't make it okay completely, but it kind of dulls the pain a little bit. It's not terrible. I know I'm really not phrasing it adequately.
You're selling it well.
it doesn't completely suck. It's just it's not.
No, you know
not,
what? I want to try it again because I've said before on Windows Weekly, Bing Maps for me in New York on my phone was horrible. Just bad, terrible. Like takes you to the wrong places, shows you buildings where they're not.
So that's dangerous bad. That's not just inconvenient. That's
actually
not,
okay. So there is one thing that the Windows 10 Maps app does that's better than Google, which is the offline maps capability. I know Google has just added this, but the way that Microsoft does it, which is based on the way Here did it, is it just kind of works. It's like it's a good system, you know, where you just, you know, country, state in our case, area, you know, depending on the size of the state, you just download it to your phone. Those maps are available when you're offline. It's a very simple system. It's kind of odd to me that Google took so long getting to it. And even today, they don't quite let you download maps like that. Like just go in and say, I want Massachusetts, you know, or whatever. I want all of New England or whatever it might be. And so that's kind of a neat feature.
And I bet they got that from Here because when Microsoft's been licensing Here's data. Since Microsoft
bought. It's probably the same maps, basically.
Right. It's probably the same maps. Yeah.
Yep. Here Maps and Here Drive Plus always had that capability.
If anyone from Microsoft is listening, Paul Thurrott just came out with the perfect slogan for the Build conference. It'll be Microsoft Build 2016. It's not terrible.
For sure. Or developers were looking for a mapping solution.
Especially if it comes from Google Maps engineers. All right, this one actually has me excited because it's about OneDrive. And I'm actually a fan of OneDrive. I've been using OneDrive since it came out. I applied for my 100 gigabytes free that they had in that super secret link that I've now been able to keep. And now we get, what, backup features?
Well, maybe, right? So this is interesting. I've not seen this one personally. Brad wrote this one up. But there was a leaked build that came out recently, and when the leak build arrived, it was an older build than one we had gotten. And, of course, the way the Windows builds still kind of work, although we don't really see this because we get so many official builds, is that some of these builds are from just, you know, different parts of the company, and some of them have different things in them, and there's, you know, they're different in kind of different ways. This one Brad installed, and he discovered in the settings app that there was new stuff in the backup tab related to OneDrive, which is not there now. It's not in the Insider Preview builds. And it's not really 100% clear how much it's going to be. I mean, there is right now, it's funny, it says, you know, backup, one of the settings says, backup my settings, like start screen layout, accounts, and passwords. And that is very much related to the settings sync stuff that's been in Windows, probably since Windows 8, but certainly is in Windows 10. And it looks like an extension of that. So it's not maybe what we're thinking of when we think of backup, you know, not a file backup and so forth. But it looks like there's an infrastructure here for more because there's a thing in there about scheduling backups. And why would you need to schedule? Why would anyone care about scheduling start menu layout sync? You know, like that doesn't like whatever, like who really cares? And so it doesn't do anything. There's no way to see what's behind it, but there is UI suggesting that backup capabilities are coming to OneDrive. Brad speculated that this might be the real reason why they backed off of their unlimited OneDrive stuff for Office 365 users, because who wouldn't back up to the OneDrive? Why not? Even if you were still going to do local backups. I mean, just to have it, you know. And maybe the storage implications of that were too great or whatever. But that's one of those things we'll have to see, A, if it really does happen, and if it does, you know, how it evolves. But we have just seen evidence that it may be happening. And hopefully it does.
I'd like to see finer control over what is synced and what is not. I know there's a control panel, and I've been tweaking around with it. But
yeah, yeah.
For some reason, the sync is stupid enough to think that I want all the settings for my laptop to be on my desktop. And even it doesn't matter what I tweak, it keeps messing. Because at home, I'm one of these bad people who is using one of those 42-inch 4K monitors as a computer yeah. monitor. But it means I have to play with my scaling. And every time it resyncs, it either makes my laptop too big or it makes the text on that screen too small.
I need to introduce you to a term that has become popular in the Microsoft community, and that is, this is a hard computer science problem to solve.
It's made me almost, I've been thinking about desyncing and just making it a local account just so it doesn't do that every single time I boot up. And it seems like that would be a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you put that in? And why wouldn't you make those settings sticky? Because I remember at one point I had it perfect, and then it did an update, and all the settings went back to normal. And I'm not doing this anymore.
That's one of the, actually one of the hardest things about being on the Insider program is that when you install one of those builds, it actually blows a lot of stuff back to defaults. And and some of the things it blows back to defaults are a little confusing. You know, it's Windows size and placement. Right. So you open, you know, for example, on a very large widescreen display like the one I'm using, when you open the Notepad application for the first time, it opens like this letterboxed, you know, CinemaScope, you know, movie screen for some reason, which is, I don't know who would ever want to write like that. I prefer it to be more of a portrait looking thing. And so, you know, I customize that. It's just a little thing, but I use it every day. You install a new build and it blows back to, you know, like this. You're like, oh, man, you know, and you spend part of that day kind of applying all the little changes you like to make. I agree with you, but I you know, Microsoft has always, they've always had a tough time deciding between making it simple and making it granular. And, you know, how do you present the complex UI for the people who want it? And how do you keep the defaults, you know, making a lot of sense for most people and not making other people upset about those defaults? You know, it is literally a hard computer science problem. Maybe it's a hard psychology program, a problem or whatever, but. they've been struggling with this one for, well, since Windows 8, basically.
It's also made it easier for my dad to troll me. I leave a desktop in Vegas, and it actually has my credentials, and he has my logins. And every once in a while, he'll change the screen to a picture that says, call your mother and I, and it syncs across all my computers.
That's brilliant. That's nice. Good.
And he says it's the only way I can get a hold of you because you don't answer your phone.
Wow.
All right.
That's good. That's good.
Okay, what about this? Microsoft has apparently backpedaled a little bit, and they say you will not have to upgrade entirely to Windows 10 if you want a new PC.
Sort of.
Yeah. Not really, but kind of. Yeah. At least it sounds like that.
Yeah, this is an update to something they talked about a couple weeks back, where they said, if you were buying a new Skylake machine and you wanted to take it to Windows 7 or Windows 8 and not put it on Windows 10, Microsoft kind of drew a line in the sand and they said, you know what? We're gonna have a list of machines that we are fully supporting that we'll let you do that on, but we're only going to do the full existing support till July 2017. So like next year. I think what happened was enterprises said, what, Microsoft? No, that's not enough time. So they pushed that date back. So it's the same list of PCs that they are going to allow you to downgrade to Windows 7 or 8 running Skylake. But you have another extra year. So you'll have until July 2018 to run the older operating systems on that list of PCs, which is about 100 or so different devices, I think. Yeah. The other thing they did, which is really good, is they had some very wishy-washy wording around what their support was going to look like on those PCs when they first announced this. And now they've clarified that wording and just said, you're going to get all the critical updates. We promise you. So that's good news.
if I read it correctly, I think what they basically suggested was that after July 2018,
right? 18, yep.
Was that each of those OSs would be supported on their extended support lifecycle through whatever the end date always was.
Right.
Meaning
2020 for Windows 7. Yep.
Yeah. So in other words, all right. So for that 2-year period on Windows 7, you'll get critical security updates only. Yep. And on Windows 8, whenever that goes to, you'll get same thing. Is that right? Yep. I think so.
That's how I read it too.
Yep. Which is, by the way, makes a lot more sense than what they said originally. Yes, yes, exactly. Because the first one was very, feel free to install Windows 7, but a year from now, you're taking it off there. It was like, whoa, hold on. What are you talking about? Like, why would I do that? You know? Yeah.
Well, there was a rush of people buying higher end last generation
Haswell
components
computers. Yeah.
Just to make sure that they could keep their Windows 7. I mean, I've got a couple of Windows 7 PCs. I've got two Windows 10 PCs, one desktop, one laptop. I've got a bunch of Windows 8.1. I even have a Vista, and sure. I keep an XP just for giggles. I every once in a while I put it on the internet and see how quickly it gets owned. Nice. But I wasn't really looking forward to them dictating what OS I could use on my hardware.
Well, yeah. You know, their central goal has still been achieved, which is they've really made a break with the past when it comes to supporting older OSs, because what they're talking about now is new silicon, which in Intel's case basically comes out every year. And Skylake is this kind of special exception for now, but Kaby Lake and Cannon Lake and whatever else they're coming out with, the only OS that will be supported on those systems is Windows 10. So mission accomplished, right? I mean, you get this 1 year, maybe we could call it a one generation grandfathering or whatever. But I mean, the real goal here, which, you know, it's not completely selfish, it benefits everyone in many ways, except for people who like choice, is the ability to have the most secure, newest, up to date OS on the most recent hardware.
We've got Jammer 2001 in the chat room saying that his inside information says that this was really a decision on Intel's part and not Microsoft. But I think you can actually make a bigger argument here. You can step back and you can say, yes, it looks as if I'm being forced to do something I don't want to do. I'm being forced to give up the software I love to get new hardware. But there is something to be said about terminating support for older systems, both hardware and software, right? I mean, you can simplify the code base. You can have a more predictable experience of both software and hardware. This is what Apple gets to do, right?
The contention that this is Intel's decision is not 100% correct, although Intel factors into this. If you think about a modern computing device, whatever it is, USB 3.1 / USB-C / Thunderbolt ports, Windows Hello Camera, a fingerprint reader, the transforming body style where it can turn into a tent or a presentation or, you know, a laptop, whatever. Maybe the screen pops off. All that, whatever kind of new, you know, wonderfulness that is in that computer. Putting Windows 7 on such a device doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense in the sense that Windows 7 is not designed and will never be designed to take advantage of some of that new stuff, you know? And so I think the ability to go back to older versions of Windows is really mostly for businesses.
Yep.
And I think the thinking here is that if we get far enough out, businesses aren't going to want to buy new generation hardware with old generation Windows anymore, because at some point they will just be on Windows 10. And so they're going to be on that train anyway. And so this whole kind of argument about what's supported, what isn't, it's only a matter of time before that kind of goes away anyway. And so I think this becomes less crucial with each generation. So I think by extending this one out a year, this is Microsoft kind of buying everyone a little bit of time. And we're going to settle in a very uncomfortable way into the new normal, you know?
Yep. To the point of the person in the chat room who said this might be Intel, I bet it is very heavily Intel. And the reason is, who's going to want to buy a Skylake PC if you're a business and you only could run your operating system that everyone else in your company was running for a year?
Right. So the reason I said that was partially correct is that all of the companies that make operating systems, which I mean Microsoft, well, Apple, you know, Linux makers as well, right? They need to support the new technology in their operating system. A company like Microsoft that has different versions of things has historically always supported older versions of the OS for 10 years. It gets to be very difficult to go back and add support for this kind of stuff, not just for new features, but just supporting just the security stuff on these older systems becomes very onerous and difficult. And really, and I know with Skylake and Windows 10, I mean, it was an Intel / Microsoft thing where Intel obviously supplies post, you know, they create a processor and then there's the software that Intel can supply that support, you know, that fixes some of the bugs. Microsoft can fix some of the stuff in their operating system. But at some point, it's just not worth it for anyone to do it. You know, and I think in the case of Skylake, there was a lot of back and forth between Microsoft and Intel, but who was going to support this? And Intel did want Microsoft to support Skylake on older versions of Windows. Microsoft felt like, you know, if we do that, we can't move forward with Windows 10. And it's this big back and forth kind of thing. And I think for the industry, what's happening here, it's, you know, for some people, it's going to be kind of it's tough because it sounds like we have less choice and because we do in some ways. But, you know, I mean, how many individuals are really choosing to go back to a 7-year-old version of Windows or whatever?
I mean, I think it was a big business request. I think Microsoft is doing more of the right thing. They said Windows 7 would be supported through extended support till 2020. And then suddenly it was like, nope, actually, no, it's going to be next year for some of you. Now at least you know you're going to get your critical updates, right, on that subset of machines.
But on whatever subset of machines, I mean, let's face it, if you're running Windows 7 today, that is all you're getting anyway. There were no functional updates to Windows 7. I mean,
right. So you're getting all security updates right now, right? Not just critical, but
right. Yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is there's no Service Pack 2 coming. There's no feature pack coming to Windows 7 that's going to make it look and work like Windows 10. There's no Microsoft is not adding stuff to Windows 10, like or to Windows 7. For all intents and purposes, Windows 7 is now fully supported on Skylake for the extent of its lifetime. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. There are companies out there who they want the migration not to be to a Windows 10 desktop. They want the migration to be to a Windows 10 virtual machine. And they can say this because they know that a lot of enterprises are looking at these deadlines and they're saying, well, it's not just the cost of replacing the hardware and the software. There's the retraining. There's all the compliance issues that we're going to have to deal with anytime we're rolling in a new OS. We may have to rewrite our software. There are now these consultants that will come in and they will help you rewrite your software for a mobile first, cloud first approach to a deployment. And their whole thing is, look, this fits in with Microsoft's new strategy where this will be the last OS you ever have to retrain. Everything's going to build off of Windows 10. Everything's going to be added automatically to Windows 10. And we will even take the hardware equation out from you because your employees are already using the devices that they want to use. I could see an IT department holding out long enough to get to that because I'd say we're 2 or 3 years for being able to migrate to a computerless Windows 10 environment.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, that's very much related to the earlier conversation about cloud first Windows 27th or whatever the number was, where that's kind of the future. I mean, sure. The democratization of the client, essentially.
I mean, would you do that? Mary Jo and Paul, would you do that? Would you have, say, your Office PC is nothing but a virtual machine? It doesn't actually exist, but you can call it up on your phone, on your tablet, on your laptop, no matter what OS you're using. And it gives you a fully verified, fully vetted, policy-adherent Windows 10 desktop with all the applications and all the network permissions that you need without ever worrying about your machine possibly infecting the corporate network.
So I don't think it's a matter of would we do it. I think it's a matter of would that work for us if someone made us do it, right?
Right.
Without naming names, I have a friend who does exactly what you describe, right? So he has two. He works from home. He's got two computers. And one of them is, so it's not really a virtual machine actually, but it's basically a remote desktop view into the other machine. Virtual, whatever. It could be virtual, but it is what you're describing. In other words, one of these things is locked down. It's got all the policies. It's the work environment, which is an older version of Windows. And then he has his own stuff, which is completely separate on a different computer. It works, of course. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think as an individual I'd want to do it, but I don't really have the need to. Okay, I have 200 computers with an eye shot of myself right now. I mean, but yes, I mean, I think definitely that could work for people. Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Jo, would you be accepting of the IT person coming down and saying, yeah, we're just not going to give you a new anything?
You know. You know, as long as I could run Notepad, yes.
Yep. That's the Notepad paradigm.
For me, this makes a ton of sense, right? Because unlike you and Paul and a lot of people who run very intensive apps on your PCs, I do not. So for me, this isn't like a crazy or scary.
Well, you know what, though? I that's something that's changed a lot over the years. I mean, I use a very light editor for writing. I use web-based apps for most things, including email and calendar. I do install Photoshop, although I use 1% of its functionality. If I could find a lightweight, even a web solution could work for the types of things that I need on a daily basis, because I do create graphics for my articles. I can get away with a lot less stuff. There's no doubt about it. I like to experiment with things, but yeah, I mean, I it's weird because I really do think this ties into that cloud first, Windows second thing. I mean, the client becomes a lot less important when most of what you're doing is essentially in the cloud. You know, you could run Groove Music or Google Play Music from a web browser. You know, there are web-based photo editors. There are web-based text editors, actually. I mean, you could do, I mean, this is why Chromebooks work. You know, this stuff is out there. I do think that's good enough for most people, that type of solution. Not a Chromebook. Yeah. Let's be clear. I did not just say Chromebooks are acceptable. you know, increasingly, I mean, a lot of what I do myself is cloud-based, and I rely a lot less on these really heavy desktop applications that used to be a central part of everything I did every day.
It's good enough.
Yeah. Good enough is exactly the term, yeah.
I will say I'm with Mary Jo Foley. The most productive app on my desktop or laptop right now is Notepad, because that's where that's where my to-do list goes. And sure. It is so satisfying to go to the start of an entry and hit the tab button that says I'm done with that one.
By the way,
that's the start of my day.
Of the native Windows apps that are pinned to my taskbar, among them, and there aren't that many, but among them are Microsoft Paint, which I use every day, and Notepad, which I also use every day.
I use the snipping tool. The snipping tool is...
Me too.
Almost every day.
That's funny. I really don't like that. So it's really? Interesting. Yeah, I don't like that.
What don't you like
it works.
About
it?
What do you like about it?
I like the fact that I hit the Windows key, I hit SN and Enter, and it pops up.
Oh, okay.
It's just there. It's on every machine.
I mean, so I'll take a screenshot either of a window or the screen. I will open Notepad and paste. Not Notepad, I'm sorry. Paint, right? Crop. Then I use Photoshop to resize / crop to a certain aspect ratio. I mean, that's pretty much...
That's the snipping. But I mean, the snipping tool is just, it's so convenient.
I really don't. Over what's just built into Windows?
Well, no, it is built.
I mean, I know it's
that's
I know
the
it's
one in Windows. Windows.
Yeah. But I mean, like, so rather than having to crop the picture, I just take what I want and boom, I'm done.
I don't like the way you do things.
Too easy. Yeah, forget
it's not going
to
work.
The folks at Microsoft, Paul Thrott now has a second slogan for the Build conference. Build, I don't like the way you do things. Yep. When we come back, let's put the last nail in the TikTok cycle for Intel, because that is actually some pretty big news. But before we do that, let's go ahead and pay some bills while Leo's away, because otherwise he'll never let me do this gig again. And I want to talk about money. I mean, we all need money to different extents. Some people need it in order to prepare for retirement. Other people want to build up a college fund for their kids. Still, other people do that incredibly important thing where they need to save up enough money to buy the next generation of the Microsoft HoloLens. No matter what you're saving up money for, you need a good strategy. Now, you could do it the old-fashioned way, and the old-fashioned way would be to take a couple of thousand, maybe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, bring it to an advisor, to a consultant, who will then invest for you, make it part of a fund, give you a dividend, hopefully grow your investment to the point at which you feel financially sound. But that advisor will charge you fees, and that advisor will probably charge you between 1% and 3% commission for the honor, the privilege of you giving your money to him or her. Yeah, that's the old way to do it. And that's not the way we do it here at the TWiT TV network, because we know about Wealthfront. Now, Wealthfront is a better way to invest, not just because the fees are much, much lower. We're talking about a quarter of 1% a year. That's 25 basis points, zero commissions and no hidden fees, but also because of the way that the investments are done. When you give your money to an investor, he or she might have a conflict of interest. He or she might just make sure that your money doesn't get the highest investment because they're looking out for the accounts that actually give them better commissions. Actually, that's happened. Instead, Wealthfront puts your money into the hands of cold, hard, calculating algorithms. Now, the algorithms can't be bought. The algorithms can't be swayed. The algorithms just know one thing: maximize the profit of my client based on their personal preferences. And your personal preferences are all accounted for in Wealthfront. Do you want to go with a low tax strategy? Do you want to go with the highest possible risk and the highest possible payback? You get to choose that with Wealthfront. Not only that, but everything is transparent. If you want to find out how your money is doing with a traditional brokerage, you have to get your broker on the line. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. But with Wealthfront, you go to the website and you can see exactly what your money is doing at that very moment. Now, that transparent and that accessible feature of Wealthfront is one of the reasons that I like them. I also like the fact that, you know, they make those decisions based on what's best for me, not what's for the clients inside the portfolio. Did you know that more than 90% of portfolios are not invested the right way for the long term? And that's because it's so confusing to talk to a broker and figure out exactly what your strategy is. Don't do that. Go to Wealthfront. Wealthfront will help you to deconfuse your financial future. And with Wealthfront's new portfolio review, you can see if your portfolio is at risk, how diversified your investments are, and what you're losing to fees. You can even minimize your taxes all for free. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Wealthfront manages over $2.6 billion in client assets, and it's growing rapidly every day. So what are you waiting for? Invest in your future today with Wealthfront. Visit Wealthfront.com/windows to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the right customized allocation that they recommend for your profile. And just for TWiT listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Join the many TWiT fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront and claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/windows. That's Wealthfront.com/windows. Your financial future awaits at Wealthfront. And we thank Wealthfront for their support of Windows Weekly. TikTok, the clock is broke. Paul, what's going on with this? Evidently, Skylake is the last of the TikTok cycle.
Yeah, I mean, Intel's been slowing down for some time. You know, they were having trouble keeping up with Moore's Law first, and then they basically started this TikTok process where the tick was the major release and the talk was the minor release, kind of like, you know, Windows Server had R2 releases for the minor releases. And as they move forward from tick to tick, they would reduce the size of the die, so they would go down on the manufacturing process. And they originally planned to move after Skylake to a 14 nanometer manufacturing process, but they're not going to be able to hit those dates. They're not going to be able to do this. I actually think there's other things wrong with Skylake that's causing this little change as well. But they basically wedged a Kaby Lake release into the schedule, kind of making it a TikTok talk, if you will. And okay, so this has been happening for a while, but Intel recently filed a 10K forum with the SEC. And it formally declares that this era of TikTok is over. And they have this new cadence, as they call it. I hate that word. It's such a Microsoft word, but a schedule, I guess, where I don't know what this means at all. But it's process architecture optimization, which I take as TikTok talk.
Right,
but other than the fact that I actually don't think that this formally says Intel will have three versions of each generation, so to speak. I think this means there may be two, there may be three, there may be four. I think what they're really saying is there'll be a big bang release, there'll be an architecture update, and then there'll be one or more optimization releases. And if you look at the current generation chip, Skylake, it's the architecture one. It's the one in the middle. Kaby Lake will be the optimization, you know, within this new schedule. But it's just interesting because Intel has kind of struggled with this stuff for a few years now. And this is them coming out and saying, okay, things are going to be different. Things are different. You know, it's just the way it is. And they've stretched out the release schedule for the 14 nanometer process, I think, to late 2018. There's a 7 nanometer process that's coming after that, you know, sometime after I'm dead, probably. And we'll see how that stuff goes. But I think aside from addressing Moore's Law and the whole TikTok thing, I think the other interesting thing about this is that Intel also realizes that they need to adhere to a yearly release of some kind. And that the only way to do that is by changing the way they do things, because they can't do TikTok, TikTok, year, year, year. It's just not going to work.
Right.
And so to hit that annual schedule, I guess the way to say it is there has to be more talks. I don't know if that makes sense.
Paul, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the TikTok that we know now, that's now mm-hmm. dying,
yep.
that really started with when Intel was losing ground to AMD. When AMD came out with the Opteron, and it was better than an Intel processor at the same mm-hmm. price or less, that's when they kind of ramped it up. Because for the longest time, they had just sort of been trailing out a processor here and there, not really right. working on any advances because they didn't have to. Well, now that Intel is so far ahead of AMD or anybody else the x86 game, it seems as if the TikTok's not as necessary.
It's not as important. Yeah. I think we get hung up on the Moore's Law thing because we keep trying to hold Intel to this standard. But we get to this point now where electronics are so amazing, you know, and they're so tiny. It really sort of artificially adhering to this doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't remember when this started. The two big memories I have of Intel falling behind are with mobile chips, which was the beginning of the core processors, which came from Israel, and also with what we now call X64, which was an AMD innovation, where Intel was pushing Itanium as the 64-bit solution. It was huge and unwieldy and just was not going to work. It was not power efficient. And AMD said, why can't we just make X86 work with 64-bit? And by the way, that's the standard we're all on right now. Intel had to basically adopt it. So that was those are the two big moments for me that Intel failed and then recovered. I mean, right now I would argue that where they're failing is in mobile again, but now these days by mobile, we're talking about smartphones and tablets where they just don't really have a big presence in that market and they're losing big ground to ARM.
Yeah. That era did not last too long, but I will have to say that was an exciting few years of processor architecture because, we knew that Intel had been sitting because there was no reason for them to develop faster processors. There was no competition. And AMD came out of nowhere, and probably 2 years, maybe 2 years.
Yeah, they had a good run.
They had a great run, and since then, not so.
Yeah, they're kind of an alternate. Well, we know from Microsoft, we've seen it today right now with Apple, that things don't go so well when you're dominant. You know, when you don't have anything to fight for, you know, things kind of slow to a crawl. That's how things like IE happened. You know, you know, you don't try anymore.
No one's pushing you.
Yeah.
Mary Jo. Are you worried about... Actually, I have an idea. Hey, Intel people, you know how Paul's been giving the Microsoft people all the great branding? I've got a new name for your TikTok or TikTok, whatever you're going to call it. I think that's ridiculous. Go with a branding that has worked really well in food retail and call one like it, the next one love it, and the next one got to have it.
Wow.
The Cold Stone of processors.
Is that like did it, done it, doing it tomorrow kind of thing?
No, those are the sizes of ice cream that you can buy at Cold Stone. There is no small, medium, large. Just like 11.
And then dump truck.
Heart attack. You know, the third one's heart attack. All right, let's go ahead and move into Windows Phone because I only talk about Windows Phone every time I'm hosting Windows Weekly. So this is my dosage for the next year or so. Hit me.
I'm so sorry. Yep.
We'll make it quick because it was kind of a quick announcement.
Yep.
Microsoft announced last week, hey, finally, we're starting to roll out Windows 10 Mobile to Windows Phone 8.1 users. But the rollout wasn't what many people were expecting. A couple years ago, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, Microsoft said, we're going to have Windows 10 for all Windows 8 handsets. And people didn't forget that. But when the actual announcement happened last week, it was more like, here are the dozen or so Lumias and other Windows phones that are going to get Windows 10 Mobile, and the rest of you are not. There are some very significant things missing from the list, including the Lumia icon on Verizon. Although once, I think it was Gabe All from the Windows Insider program tweeted to Paul, we're still considering the icon, even though there isn't going to be a second wave of phones that are going to get this. Mm-hmm. If you're not on the list, that's it. It sounds like icon is still a maybe, but everything else that is not here is not getting it as far as we know. If you are an insider, you can still put this latest Windows 10 Mobile build on your phone. But at some point, probably, I would guess around June when Redstone 1 comes out, you're not going to be able to update anymore to future insider builds if your phone is not on this list. So it was not a happy day, even though many people had been calling for it, expecting it, wanting it. In the end, a lot of phones got left off this list. And the reason that Microsoft gave for leaving them off the list was we based our choice of what to include on what Windows insiders said worked well running Windows 10 Mobile previews.
Man. That's tough, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Let's just throw the insiders under the bus. It wasn't our fault.
Yeah. It wasn't a great day. Let's say that. And I think as somebody who's been hoping, I even said on the show previous to last week, I said, I'm pretty sure the icon's got to be on that list. And then when it wasn't, I'm like, well, wrong. Okay.
yep. Well, the 930 was, right? And the 930 is the same phone.
Right. So the icon is not, the 930 is on the list, which there are a lot of arbitrary things. The 1020 is not on the list. The 820...
Those I understand because of age and processor, right? These are slower processors. They're old phones.
But still, the icon is somewhat of an older phone too, but it was the last true flagship on Verizon for Windows phones. So I think a lot of people were like, okay, they got to have that one on there, right? No.
So that's it. The HTC One M8 is not on there. The HTC 8X is not on there.
Yeah.
You know, the 1020, the 920, there were no 512 megabyte phones on there. There was a promise that that would happen. Yeah. It's kind of a tough one. So,
it was.
You know, things change, I guess. I think for phones that are over 2 years, I don't think you can make much of a case that they should be upgraded. That's the length of an average contract. No one should expect major OS upgrades after 2 years, frankly. I mean, despite the fact that Microsoft did promise that. There are a lot of kind of lower-end, newer phones that are on the list. And then there was the question.
There was one that was on the list, one of the blue phones that was listed as on the list and upgradable to 10, and now it's not on the list.
I might have this backwards. There are two generations of the blue phone. So there's a Win HD... Oh, no, I see what it is. It's okay. So actually, both generations of Win HD are on there. Both generations of Win Junior are not.
Yeah.
And I think originally, both of them were upgraded to LTE devices last year. And I don't remember off the top of my head, but let's just say that a blue Win Junior LTE is probably the equivalent of a Lumia 630, something like that. And the 630 phones are on there with 1 gig, you know, if they have 1 gig of RAM. It's an odd list.
Yeah.
It's not good. But at least you don't have to worry about carriers blocking the updates, right?
Yeah. There won't be any updates to block.
Verizon, the Lumia 735 on Verizon is on the list, but I don't know of anybody who got that yet. So
I haven't seen it on mine.
Yeah.
So if you're a Windows phone user,
try this. Yeah.
Right now, and your phone is not on the upgrade list, do you feel compelled to buy a newer phone that will have Windows 10? Is it a big enough upgrade for you that you think it will give the phone another generation of life?
Yeah, you're talking to the wrong person, because one of the things I've noticed, because I do have a lot of phones, and I in fact, you can kind of see them over my shoulder, the green thing over there in the corner is a pile of them. I have blown them all back to Windows Phone 8 point whatever, you know, whatever their default was. And I've checked for the upgrade, you know, for Windows 10 Mobile. I don't have a single phone that's actually gotten it organically, you know, like out in the real world. But I did notice going back to Windows Phone 8, one, you know, with update one or update two, depending on the phone, it's a much cleaner looking system. I mean, I think a lot of people are ultimately going to be kind of disappointed in Windows 10 Mobile. I'd gotten used to it because it's something I'd been using across my devices. But going back to Windows Phone 8, you know, 8.1, whatever it was, you kind of remember like how awesome this thing used to be, and it's a little depressing. I would tell people that if you like the phone you're using, I wouldn't sweat the Windows 10 thing.
I know. Every time somebody tweeted me and said, I can't wait for Windows 10 Mobile, I'm like, so what do you want in Windows 10 Mobile that isn't in Windows Phone 8.1? I'm just curious. And I think some people erroneously thought they were going to get Hello and Continuum,
which
can't because you need the new hardware. So I was like, okay, after that, what else?
You know, I mean, you do have, well, you have newer apps.
You get universal
apps.
Windows apps.
Yeah, right? And some of those are decent. And if you know, for the seven people that use Groove Music, the Groove Music app on Windows 10 Mobile is the best version of that app. It's crazy as that sounds. It's great. But I don't know. I mean, I'd rather have the Here map and Drive apps on Windows Phone 8.1. I could certainly make do with the, you know, Mail, Calendar, Xbox Music, whatever. I don't know. I guess I think what you'll lose out on eventually is going to be updated apps that only run on Windows 10. And so there are going to be apps like Facebook and others that are important that probably are only going to be updated on Windows 10 going forward at some point. And maybe that's where you start to lose that. But, I, you know, you're better off getting a new phone at that point, I would say.
I think we can safely say Windows 10 for phone, it's not terrible.
Well.
We can say that?
Oh, wait, can we say that?
That's a very aggressive statement. It's. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's no one's fault.
There's another one.
Mistakes
Microsoft,
happen.
It's no one's fault. These things happen.
Let's just agree not to blame anyone and move forward, shall we?
I like that.
I mean, I've had a lot of people ask me, what do you think Microsoft's going to say about Windows 10 Mobile at Build? I'm not sure how much they're even going to say about it.
Other than the bullet point, right, that these apps run on, and here's a list of things, one of them is phone. I mean, is there going to be some big phone component to a keynote, or I don't know. I have a hard time.
At some point, they're probably going to use Continuum to show that the cloud first strategy works really well on Continuum. Yep. That's probably about it.
Doing what you described earlier, right? Yep. The virtual machine / cloud solution. I mean, you know, that's actually a kind of a neat usage, and that's something that HP is pushing with that new Windows phone as well.
All right. Well, let's move to something that is actually kind of exciting. And if you want to get your hands on HoloLens, you don't have to spend $3,000 as long as you can pretend that you're trying to improve your home, at least in Seattle. Who's got this one?
I don't know. Who has this one?
I believe Paul does.
No, I don't want to talk about this. Sorry.
We can talk through this kind of quick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft's been finding some various business partners for HoloLens. And one of the main applications is in retail. They just announced a partnership with Lowe's this week where they are letting some customers use it to help design kitchen remodels, right? I've seen people saying, but as of next week, March 30th, Microsoft's now shipping the HoloLens. They're not really shipping the HoloLens. They're shipping the developer kits for the HoloLens to some people who are in the first wave and to customers like Lowe's, who want to use it in these kind of demo apps, right? But it's not the launch of HoloLens for businesses next week. It's definitely a developer launch. I'm sure at Build, there's going to be some probably private meetings for people who are getting the HoloLens developer kits, where they're going to be coaching you and giving you more tips about building apps, kind of like a university kind of classroom thing. But it's not really the launch of the HoloLens next week. It's still very much a developer push, a developer story at this point. And yeah, there are some of these apps like Lowe's that are meant to show people how this is going to work in a business setting. But that's kind of where we're at with HoloLens right now.
I mean, I guess the interesting thing about the Lowe's thing is just that it's out in the public. And so if you as an average human being wants to walk into a Lowe's and pretend to redesign your kitchen, you might get to try a HoloLens on. In fact, I've gotten a lot of requests from people on Twitter. You know, do you happen to know which stores exactly going to have this? And when that, you know, I mean, I guess there are a lot of kitchen remodels that are about to happen in Seattle area. I don't know. I mean, I think it's notable that it's out in the public, right? I mean, this suggests a certain amount of, you know, support from Microsoft that it's going to be okay.
And I think it'll be a very guided experience, right? Like, you won't be able to, like, put the HoloLens thing on and run around the store. It won't be like that.
No, no. Yeah, right, right. No, yeah, right. Grab the virtual door handle of the cabinet and put your hologram items inside. I don't know. Maybe you open the cabinet and, like, hologram balls bounce out and they bounce all over the store.
The people who haven't followed the HoloLens saga at Microsoft, the first time they put it on, though, they will be blown away. If they've never tried an AR product before.
So I think there are two sides to it. You're right. I there is a fundamental magic to HoloLens. It's amazing where the holographic items, whatever, what do you want, holograms, I guess we call them, appear to be glued to the surfaces on which they, you know, appear to be on. And it survives, you know, you can look around them in different directions and they stay there. Mm-hmm. There's no shimmering or moving or whatever. It really completes the picture and it makes it real in your head. But I think the other part of it's going to be the, you know, the
tiny little window.
Yeah, because if you're looking at a cabinet, a virtual cabinet up on a wall or however they're going to do it, I mean, you move your head just a little bit, you don't see the cabinet anymore. It's not, there's no peripheral vision at all. And that's, I mean, you'll see the store, you know, you'll still see what's really there. But the hologram part of it, you know, it's limited to that view slice.
But Paul, is that just a digerati? Because I mean, we look at it, and I looked at the first prototype, and then I like you, I wondered, why did you shrink the field of vision? I don't understand that. But
oh, so did you hear what they told me about that?
Oh, what?
So they didn't actually. This is what Microsoft told me. So they said, and by the way, they took a year to tell me this, but they said they didn't shrink the field of view. They said the big difference between the giant alien headset thing with all the tendrils coming off of it, you know, the first one that we tried, and the second one was that the first one didn't restrict your peripheral vision in the ways that the shipping unit does. And it just gave the appearance that you had a wider field of view. They said they haven't changed it at all. It's just that, you know, once you get, you know, once you're, you know, you have kind of like the old lady glasses on or whatever, and it restricts your...
Okay. Actually, I could see that.
Or maybe I have it backwards. Maybe, I'm sorry. Did I have that backwards? Maybe I have it backwards. Well, whatever whatever it was, that switched. And it has to do with peripheral vision. And you have to be able to see your feet, because if you don't, you're not grounded in the world. You might fall. Right. You know, you'll fall over. You'll lose your sense of balance or whatever. But it had to do with differences in the rest of the unit. But the actual field of view, they said, hadn't changed at all. It's just a perception thing. To which I said, you know, if you knew that was going to happen, why didn't you tell anybody? You know?
You know, the people, though, who have seen some of these videos that Microsoft has put out showing what the experience is like, or who have watched keynotes, and they go to Lowe's and try this, I think they will be surprised, and not necessarily in a positive way. Right. I mean, because they still are showing it, for the most part, as being like this really immersive experience, which it's not really.
Yeah, it's not, yeah. It's great. I mean, but it is
it's
great.
It's really cool what you can do.
Yeah. And it really does. It gives you hope for the future, because obviously that field of view could only expand. It's only going to get better over time and all that stuff. But once you experience it through this slice, you kind of want to, you know, you want it. It's like the Wizard of Oz. You want it to go from black and white to color. I mean, once you see how good it can be in here, you want it to be everywhere, you know.
Yeah, so I guess we're complaining in hope.
We're complaining and hoping. I'm hoping that I have less to complain about in the future, which is a normal state for me.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk about what I personally always wanted, and that is an artificially intelligent bot. that's the kind of research I can get behind.
A chatbot, to be
yes,
clear.
Yes. This, I think we've all been waiting for this. This is the big product from Microsoft that will redefine the company. They've created a way for a computer to talk to you and catfish you without you ever knowing it's not human.
And it sounds like some people got catfished today, in fact, who were talking to Tay.
Tay. Yeah. What division did this come out of? Is this a garage product that they made real, or is this an actual division of Microsoft?
It's a combination team, Microsoft Research with Bing, who created Tay.ai. And it's basically a bot that's helping Microsoft collect information about people who are in the 18 to 24 year old group and how they treat social chat. So it feels like you're talking to a person. It's a bot. But they had a bunch of this. It's interesting who devised this. Some of the people inside Microsoft, plus some improvisational comedians. I guess who they brought in. And so they have this bot that has the personality of a teen girl who's talking to everyone today. It's kind of like what they did in China. And I forget how you pronounce this. X-I-A-O-L-C-E. There was another conversational bot that the Bing team built a couple of years ago. So kind of similar to that, where it's an experiment. Microsoft's just using it as a way to kind of work on their natural language understanding, and it's a fun little distraction. I think what's going to be interesting though is we've got a guy whose name is the Walking Cat, who we talk about a lot on the show, and he found earlier this week that Microsoft had built this bot framework. He thinks it's for developers. So I'm curious if they actually built this on top of that, and or if Microsoft is going to have developers be able to build their own bots on top of that bot framework. And at Build, maybe they'll say, hey, look, we built this. You guys can build your own bots too. That would actually make this a little cooler, I think, if that's what that is.
So like Bing is like totally going to get like totally chill, like a teen girl. Be awesome, like, you know?
I have a hard time imagining that.
I'm not sure if I want to see the internet through the artificial eyes of a teenage girl. That sounds...
I know.
There's something there that sounds fundamentally wrong.
Although I'll tell you, I'm already kind of liking Taylor because today she said to about me, she ain't getting old. She is increasing in value, yo.
Wait, nice. Is that a quote?
That is a quote.
This is the way Mary Jo speaks.
That's the way I talk, yeah.
This is Valley Jo. It's a...
Valley Jo, yes.
Yeah. Like totally. I guess this is a good first step, right? I mean, conversational AI bots do lead to more, especially if you start combining this with some of the more recent advances in neural networking and deep learning. You can have a bot that actually learns from these very strange and creepy conversations.
Yeah.
Right.
At least Tay is honest up front and will tell you that she's a bot.
Yes.
Because they could totally flip a switch and make it incredibly weird.
Yep.
All right. Let's. Wow. Wow.
See, look at that. Isn't that cool? I'm cool. Who knew?
Huh. Okay. I think we've crossed that uncanny valley.
We have.
All right. Let's go away from creepy AI bots and instead talk about Windows apps getting over to the Xbox.
Parties.
Yeah. Creepy Xbox apps.
We know that two big things are happening on the Xbox One this year related to Windows 10, right? Because they added the Windows 10 infrastructure to it with the new Xbox Experience back in November. And we've got Cortana to look forward to. Cortana is going to replace the, it's not Hey Xbox, it's whatever they call that feature. You know, we say Xbox and it does whatever. And we're going to get Windows 10 apps and the store. And in this case, the commingling or the combination of the Xbox store and the Windows store. And we don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but the only news I have to report here is that we have an Xbox executive going on record as saying it's going to happen this summer. And the only thing that's interesting there is it makes me kind of wonder if it isn't tied to that Redstone release of Windows 10, which we expect at, in the middle of the year. And that I think maybe next week at Build we'll hear more about that. The other thing is, I didn't really write about this, and I know Mary Jo didn't either, but we should at least mention this. There was a Microsoft event at the Game Developer Conference last week where they had dancing girls in schoolgirl outfits, which people correctly found to be sexist. And my question isn't simply how did this happen, although that's an excellent question. And Microsoft's head of Xbox, Phil Spencer, and also their head of HR, whose name I don't remember, both addressed this publicly and to employees, but rather, how is it that this happened and no Microsoft events at the event put a stop to it? You think in 2016 we'd have a little more common sense, you know, when it comes to that kind of thing, especially, well, not especially, but at a video game event, maybe especially, it's just where this is kind of a, you know, sexism is a huge problem. It's just kind of an unfortunate thing. So,
yeah, we saw that at GDC last week. The Microsoft party at GDC last week.
Yeah. Not good.
And they didn't get the memo that booth babes.
No,
we don't do that anymore.
It's not the Middle Ages anymore. Yeah. Congratulations. So that's too bad. And I this is like one of those things that you run into. You know, you see someone cheating in an Xbox game and you report them. And you never, I mean, not never, but almost never hear back. You never hear, I actually have heard, I actually got an email or a message to the Xbox system one time that said, thank you for your report. The offending person has been kicked from the system and you've made Xbox safer. Thank you. And I was like, what the heck was that? Like, I've never seen something like that. I just got one of those, you know. I'd like to hear back on this one. I'd like to think that the people responsible for this will no longer be associated with Microsoft. And I think that needs to be how this happened. So, you know, we'll see how they handle it, but it's just an unfortunate thing.
Yeah. It needs to be public too. They need to be.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I want to hear, I want to hear about it. Yeah, exactly.
It can't just be a reshuffling that goes buried under the news.
Right.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Well, I know we have very little time left, but when we come back, can we do a little bit of Q&A?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I thought we were going to have time. I was, you know, we were talking earlier. There's not really a lot going on this week. We could probably
were having fun.
Do some Q&A. How dare we have fun?
We were coming up with slogans for Microsoft and for Intel. Yep. I mean, that takes up a lot of time.
Yep. Yes.
But before we get to the Q&A, let's go ahead and thank FreshBooks. Now, Leo and I both love FreshBooks because it helps you do what you want to do. Now, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're starting your own business, if you're a creative professional who is just breaking into the world of gigging, then you understand what I'm talking about. You want to focus on the thing that you're passionate about. You want to focus on your art or your engineering or the thing that you do, the service that you provide. But there's that other part. That other part is getting paid. That other part is making sure that your bills get paid. That other part is making sure that you invoice in a timely fashion so that you get what's coming to you. Well, you could do it the old way. The old way was you maybe had a spreadsheet. Maybe you had an archaic QuickBooks program, something that might help you keep your finances in order. And then you worry about invoicing. You worry about reminding those entities that you've invoiced them. And you worry about making sure the money gets in and out in a timely fashion. Folks, don't do that anymore. Instead, use FreshBooks. FreshBooks is like having your own accountant, your own assistant in the cloud. You can create and send invoices efficiently, plus get paid online quickly with FreshBooks payments. You have the option to request a deposit in FreshBooks and get paid upfront, which means no more covering costs out of pocket or waiting until the end of a project to get paid. And they've made it incredibly easy for you to track your billable time. Now, this is important. I used to run my own business in the Silicon Valley, and we had clients, and we had contracts, and we had just a fantastic cash flow. But the problem was that I wasn't really good with the books and I didn't really want to hire an accountant because I thought, well, I can just do a couple of numbers. I can keep on top of it. And I can't tell you how many times I actually let a contract go unpaid because I forgot about it, because it fell off my to-do list until it was too late. Don't let that happen to you. Go with the accounting solution that is built in the cloud and built to make your life easier. They've also made it incredibly easy for you to use their EMV, their chip card-enabled card reader, so that you can take credit cards if that's the kind of business that you're in. You can accept credit cards wherever business takes you, quickly and securely with their entire redesigned iPhone app. Plus, you can create beautiful invoices in just seconds. No offense to Mary Jo, but that Invoice and Notepad just isn't going to look as official and as good as you can get from FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. With FreshBooks, you can focus on what you love most, growing your business, not crunching the numbers. You'll wonder why you didn't start with FreshBooks sooner. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to get started with FreshBooks. Getting started is simple, and it's totally free for 30 days. Just go to FreshBooks.com/windows, and don't forget to enter Windows Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank FreshBooks for their support of Windows Weekly. Let's get to the Q&A. I don't know if you've been collecting, but I have actually been snipping a few questions from the chat room and putting it into Notepad out of deference to Mary Jo. We have one from Lawn Dog, who actually writes, this was a very angry comment in the chat room, directed to you, Paul.
Of course.
And
obviously.
Lawn Dog asks, and you can imagine this with the angry face and just clenched fist. He says, why is Microsoft pushing the demise of Windows 7, which is one of their most successful products? There's something more to what they are attempting than to do just a marketing ploy. And so what are the positives for them publicly trying to kill off Win 7?
Well, first of all, Microsoft is not unique in trying to kill off a previous product to sell a new product, right? I mean, Apple does this every time they announce anything. Remember that iPhone we had last year? Yeah, that's a piece of shit. Here's the new one. In Microsoft's case, it's not so much about product quality, although, well, actually quality factors into it, but it's really more about security and that problem we did talk about during the course of the show that, you know, keeping multiple versions of Windows up to date with every security vulnerability and all the fixes that go along, you know, when there are zero-day attacks, like how hard it is to fix this thing across multiple versions of Windows. You know, getting everyone on the same code base or as close to the same code bases as possible is a laudable goal. I mean, they're doing it in some ways that, you know, Mary Jo and I, we've talked a lot about this. We don't necessarily agree with their aggressive practices, but the end result, the desire they have, is a good one. And it's, you know, Windows 7 was designed, Windows 7 is Windows Vista R2, right? This is something that dates back literally 13 years ago to Longhorn in 2003 and that PDC. And this Windows 7 was the end result of all of that work. And it was great for that day, but it was made before these mobile type PCs that we have, transforming PCs, 2-in-1 convertible laptops and so forth. Windows 10 today is a platform that works across multiple device types. You know, phone, there's your bullet point. HoloLens, like we've been talking, Surface Hub, Xbox One, et cetera. So it's really about moving the industry forward. It's not, and right now, by the way, it's free. So it's not like they're trying to, you know, we're trying to get the $99 from you. No, I mean, in some ways, they're semi-harming other parts of the industry by making Windows 10 free, because a lot of people aren't going to buy new computers. They're going to upgrade what they already have. So it's not, you know, we disagree with some of the methods, but it's not that Windows 7 wasn't great for its day. It was. It's just that time has, you know, moved on and we need to move on with it.
Yeah. And actually, I'll give Microsoft kudos for not just sitting on the cash cow that is Windows 7, because they could have done that. They could have run it right into the ground and then trickled out a new OS. This is them saying, hey, look, we've got a new direction and we feel strongly about it, that we're willing to disrupt a cash cow to make it happen. So, yeah. All right, this one's not so angry, so we'll give it to Mary Jo.
Of course.
Good.
And this comes from Jimmy Fell in the chat room, who asks, if they succeed in getting packaged Win32 apps into the App Store, and if they succeed in getting the start screen layout to come back after a reset, could this potentially allow Win32 apps to also come back after a reset?
Yeah, you know what? I'm really interested to see how Microsoft positions the Centennial Bridge, which is the bridge for bringing Win32 apps to the store at build. Because I think they are going to talk about it. It's in private preview now with some testers. So I think build would be the natural time to talk about this. But you have to ask yourself, okay, if and when they do this, and I think it is a when, not an if, what does that mean to Win32, right? Because there are still a lot of developers who aren't sold on Universal Windows Platform. Even though Microsoft has positioned this as the future, a lot of people are like, you know, my app is more complex. I want to still continue to develop Win32 apps. And if I can put them in the store, even better. So I'm gonna kind of be interested in that one and how they position what they want developers to do once they enable you to put the 132 apps in the store.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of that debate we had around Windows RT.
Yeah.
Where why can't Microsoft curate a store where they are essentially Win32 apps have been imported over to ARM, you know, like they did with Office, and make them available to those users? I mean, things have moved on from that, of course, but it's the same argument, you know. I just wonder if there is a big audience of developers out there making Win32 apps now, you know, that aren't just big apps from the past that are being maintained.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I certainly have heard of them. Let's do one more because we do need to. I want to get your picks before we close up the show. And this one comes to us from Twitter. It's a little different. This is sort of this is reaching into the cloud side of the discussion from Misael Kanal. I'm totally butchering your name. Sorry about that. And this is to either of you. What do you think about the new iPad, quote unquote, Pro only having 2 gigabytes of RAM? And of course, he's referring to whether or not it's going to be able to run those cloud first services from Microsoft.
So actually, I think that makes this. I know Mary Jo doesn't care or know anything about this, so I will.
I do not.
So 2 gigs of RAM.
I should say when it was Apple's announced day, I took most of the day off. That's nice. I don't really care.
So. Well done.
I put on my clown hat and I went to work. So
yeah, you did.
So 2 gigs of RAM is what the iPad Air 2 has, right? It's probably what the iPad Mini 4 has. It's anyone who uses an iPad knows that you load that thing up with a lot of stuff and it kind of bogs down, and that's actually going to be a huge problem. I think. I don't think the iPad Pro in its current incarnation makes any sense for almost anybody, but at least you can say the bigger one. I think it has 4 gigs of RAM, and it has the processing power and the just the overall resources to get that kind of stuff done. So, I listen. You could have called this thing iPad Air 3. You could have given it the keyboard and the pencil, and it would have been the same device. It is the same device. I mean, all of the minor improvements to the screen, et cetera, are things they would have done to the iPad Air 3. And it's just a name, you know. And I think, unfortunately, when you give something a Pro moniker, it does have a certain vibe to it that this device doesn't necessarily live up to.
An expectation that you'll be able to use it for professional things. That's silly, but
I wrote an editorial about this before the event where I just basically said, why can't the iPad just be an iPad? I don't understand this constant transformation it's undergoing. Like, just, it's a consumption device. Why can't it just be that? It's good for email and browsing the web, and it's good for games, and it's good for reading, and it's good for watching movies. And geez, that can't that just be enough? It does a lot of stuff really well. This kind of contorting it into a surface thing is something that I think makes long-term sense, but it's just iOS is just not a Pro OS. I mean, it's just not a productivity-focused kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't see it.
Do you remember this, Paul? When Microsoft was first going to do Surface, I think it was, or maybe it was, I don't remember what product it was, but you and I both were saying, wow, I wish Microsoft would put Windows Mobile on this instead of Windows. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And now, in hindsight, I think it looks smart that they didn't do that.
Although you could make the argument that a universal Windows platform type thing with the mobile office isn't so bad on that kind of a form factor. Microsoft Windows are coming. Microsoft and Apple coming at it from two different places. Microsoft has this really big complex OS called Windows that they've kind of moved down market onto devices, including IoT devices. Apple started with iOS, which, yes, I know it was based on OS 10, but an OS that was designed first for a phone, and then they've kind of moved it up market. And they're going to meet in the middle, and it's like when the trains go across the country and the track is finally complete there or whatever, the transcontinental train system, whatever. I just don't think it's ready. In the same way that when Surface first shipped, Windows wasn't ready to be used on a simple, tablet device. It was just too big and hairy. It just didn't make sense. I mean, and I think they're having the same kind of growing pains. I don't know why they don't want to add touch capabilities to the Mac beyond the fact that they sell so many more of those iOS devices than they do Macs. And I know the Mac is a very successful business for them, but iOS is so much bigger, I just think it's that hammer nail thing, right? They see everything is an, every solution is an iOS solution for Apple these days. You know, it has to be. Watch is based on iOS. TV is based on iOS. It's all iOS, you know. That's just how they see the world.
All right.
2 gigs is not enough to answer the question.
2 gigs is not enough. Well, it's time for the lightning round of tips and picks. Tip of the week.
Jeez. So I don't have any picks. I just have tips. So I'll go through these really quick because I do have a lot of them. I talked about Chrome and web apps and all that stuff. Google announced this week they're dropping the app launcher for Windows for Chrome, which no one even knows exists. It's basically another start menu that lets you access Chrome web apps. It's the start menu on a Chromebook, you know. If you're using Chrome like we are, one of the really cool things you can do with Chrome is save web apps like web pages as shortcuts, which then launch as if they are apps and they can run alongside your other apps. I've got web apps pinned to my taskbar right now for like Google Play Music and for some other things. And so Google Inbox, Google Calendar, whatever. It's a feature of Chrome. So I wrote an article about it. You can read that. We talk a lot about Audible and we do Audible picks on the show. The Audible app on, I think it's iOS and Windows Phone, which is hilarious, meaning not on Android yet, supports a new feature called sharing, where you can share, I think it's a weird number. It's like 41 seconds of an audiobook. So you're listening to an audiobook, you hear something really cool, you hit a share button. There's an edit interface where you can trim down the thing that you're sharing, and then you can share that with other people so they can hear a little clip of the audiobook you're enjoying and maybe they'll buy the audiobook. And I'm sure Android users will get that eventually at some point. And also, I just want to mention a bunch of sales stuff because Microsoft is having a spring sale on the Xbox and actually now as of today on the Windows Store as well. And there's all kinds of stuff going on. You can get an Xbox One for as little as $300. There's some really good game deals. They have Oxenfree, which is a previous Windows Weekly pick for 25% off on Windows. Oddly, the best deal I found this week is on Amazon.com. You can get Gears of War Ultimate Edition for Windows 10 digital. So you get a code and then you go to the store and you type in the code and you get the download for $10. And that's usually a $30 game. So it's a great deal. But the thing is, when you buy it, you get all of the Xbox 360 versions of the game for free, meaning you can play them on the Xbox One or will soon be able to, using that backwards compatibility feature. So you're really getting 4 games, you know, for $10. It's kind of an incredible deal. If you haven't played Gears of War, this is not a bad way to do it. So anyway, if you go to the Windows Store, go to the Xbox Store, you'll see the spring sale stuff. If you haven't bought an Xbox One, $299, I believe, is the lowest price from Microsoft directly that they've ever had. They had a similar deal over the Christmas holidays. And that's for the, you know, for the base console, but $299 and up. It's basically $50 off on all the consoles and bundles. So this would be the time to do it.
Time to get your game on.
Yep.
Speaking of getting your game on, we have an enterprise pick of the week.
We do. So I think you have one and I have one. So I'll do mine first. This week, Microsoft held its first Data Insights Summit in Bellevue. And that whole summit was about Power BI and Excel and all the things you can do around business intelligence with those tools. So there are a couple of interesting things that came out of it. One is Microsoft said they now have over 5 million subscribers for Power BI. And that's in less than a year since Power BI was launched. So that's pretty impressive. And they also showcased a new visualization tool called Sandance at this thing. And so what Sandance does, and I think the reason it's called Sandance, is it looks like dancing sand. It's a way of kind of streamlining the transitions between data elements. It's something that's going to be available as a supplementary visualization tool for Power BI and also as a standalone tool itself. I don't know if you could show any of those, but they're kind of cool when you watch the animations.
Oh, yeah. Pretty pictures.
Pretty pictures. Makes it easier to gain insights from your data, as they like to say, in the Power BI world. So that is my enterprise pick of the week, Sandance, which you can go and download now from the Power BI gallery.
All right.
And I know you have a pick, too.
I do. I want to run really quickly. It's something that I actually talked about on This Week in Enterprise Tech on Monday in a pre-recording. And that is Microsoft is responding to the whole Apple FBI potential law enforcement overreach situation in a different way. Whereas a lot of companies are looking for a technological solution, a way to build encryption that either meets the FBI's needs for to get in or to build encryption so strong that not even they can get in, Microsoft's taking a slightly different approach. They have opened up Azure Deutschland. The idea is they can guarantee that if you subscribe to the service, that every single byte and every single service, every feature you ever enable will never leave the soil of Germany. Now, they've actually separated out the service from the regular Azure corral of companies, of partners. It's run by Deutsche Telekom. And according to the agreement, Microsoft has no legal right whatsoever to access the data. If they want to access the data in order to help a customer with a request, they actually have to request from the trustee of Deutsche Telekom, and then a temporary authorization is given just for that area and just for the engineer who requested it, and then it expires almost immediately. So the idea is, rather than Microsoft having to fight off a law enforcement agency coming to it saying, we need you to unlock this encrypted file, Microsoft can now say, we have no right to access it. We have absolutely no connection to it anymore. That data is out of our hands. And unless you want us to do something illegal, which you're not supposed to be able to do, Microsoft can now say, we've got a hands-off policy to data. Now, this is not perfect because it is still inside of a country. It's still inside of a sovereign nation. But I'm interested to see if this sort of cloud-first legal wrangling is going to become more commonplace among the cloud providers. Yeah, that's me. I like the legal angle. Let's move on to the code name pick of the week. We've got, what is it, Project Willow?
Project Willow, yes. So another discovery by the fantastic walking cat who we talk about every week because he's so good at finding all these kinds of things. Walking Cat found a reference to this thing called Project Willow. And he and I both have been looking into what that is. We both think that it is the codename for the more simple installation capability that's going to be built into the next version of Visual Studio. One of the things about Visual Studio 2016, which confusingly is codenamed Visual Studio 15, we think this is going to be an announcement at Build, is this whole new lightweight installation experience. And I have a picture of this from Walking Cat also embedded in a blog post I did. If you look at that blog post, it shows you a very simple installation screen that will make it really clear kind of which experience you want when you're installing Visual Studio, because a lot of people complain that it's too bulky, too slow, too hard to install. So this kind of pulls out, hey, do you just want Visual Studio Core Editor? Do you want to do game development? Do you want to do .NET desktop development? Do you want to use Python? And you'll be able to pick and choose from those items which thing you install. So if that is what this is, Project Willow should make developers' lives much easier in terms of installing the correct experience.
Hey, and the part of the show that I really enjoy, even though I don't drink beer, I love to hear Mary Jo passionately speak about it. you've got a special beer pick of the week because both of you will be traveling.
Yes. Next week is Microsoft Build. We will both be in San Francisco. So I said, you know what? We should pick a San Francisco-based brewing company. So I'm picking Almanac. And my beer pick is Almanac's Golden Gate Gozer. Gozer beers are like an unfiltered wheat-style beer from Germany. And what distinguishes them is usually they are very citrusy and also salty. And that may sound a little weird to people who aren't used to it, but it actually is very refreshing. Another reason I picked this beer is we're having a meetup at Build next week. So if you're still in town, even if you don't go to the show, but if you're in San Francisco on April 1st, come to our meetup. It's at Red Dog Restaurant and Bar. And we're going to be there from 4 to 7. And the Almanac Golden Gozer seems to be one of the beers that they'll have on at happy hour. So if you're there, I would recommend you try it. And speaking of Build, we also are going to be doing Windows Weekly live from Build next Friday, April 1st. We're going to be doing it from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific. So if you're at the show and you want to come and be in the live audience, I'd say come around 12:30. There are going to be some chairs and a lot of standing room. We're going to be in the area called The Hub for Channel 9. They're going to be helping us do the show. And if you are not going to Build, but you're in San Francisco and you want to come to the show, you can email tickets@twit.tv and you'll get a downloadable printable ticket that you'll be able to use to access the space just for the show. But seating is going to be limited. So if you are coming from outside, make sure you come on the early side to get in there.
Yeah.
Should be a good show.
It should be. And one quick note, where the new studio is going to be, we're actually right next to Lagunitas Brewing Company. So I'm thinking Windows Weekly probably should be doing on-site episodes from now on.
Oh,
I'm listening.
We need to start up a partnership. We
just, next door, you say?
Yeah, we'll run an Ethernet cable across the sidewalk, and we'll be good to go.
Nice.
Actually, I think the way the show should go is that Mary Jo and I should be behind the bar with the tap, and then take it from there.
All right, I like it. And last but not least, the Audible pick of the week.
Actually, we're not going to do that. I'm sorry. I only do that when they advertise.
Got it.
Okay. I just move it along from show to show until that happens. So.
Well, Paul, Mary Jo, this has been an absolute pleasure. I don't get to do it enough, but I do enjoy when it does happen to just spend the last 2 hours speaking with you, talking about things that geeks love. Don't forget, folks, that you can watch this show every Wednesday at 11 o'clock a.m. Pacific time. Next week, Leo Laporte will be back with Paul and Mary Jo. And Paul, what do people need to know about you? What do you have upcoming? Where can they find your work?
Well, I'm an Apple enthusiast, and my stuff is all at therot.com. You can find me on Twitter at therot, which is easily spelt TZQ7. No, it's THURROTT.
So. And Mary Jo, they can find you at the All About
Android.
No, Microsoft blog. Yep. And what will you be working on?
I'll be working on my Android phone. I also will be working on more previews for Build. Ooh. I have some good stuff coming up in the next few days. Some guesses, some educated, not so educated guesses about what's coming. And I'm on Twitter at Mary Jo Foley.
Thank you very much. Thanks to the both of you. Of course, you can find me here on the Twit TV network. Do Know How on Thursdays. I do This Week in Enterprise Tech on Fridays. You'll find me doing a lot of live events. If you want to see what my schedule looks like and what we'll be covering next, you can always follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PadreSJ. Thanks to everyone who makes this show possible. Of course, to Lisa and Leo, who let me do this show while they were away. And to our TD today is Alex. I don't know if Alex has a microphone on or a camera on him, but he's been back there doodly pushing the buttons, making sure that
he always has a camera on him. I'd want to keep a close eye on that guy.
Well, yes. So we know that he's perpetually unhappy. We're not sure what he's unhappy about. But until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit, in for Leo Laporte, saying see you next time for Windows Weekly.